This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Mary Beth Gianni bringing you Storytime Magazine. It is the second half of the April issue. First story is from the Storyteller's Corner. It's called How Br'er Rabbit Fooled the Elephant and the Whale. "What a sunny day it is," said Br'er Rabbit. "I think I'll go to the beach." So he ran lippity-lippity-lippity across fields and through fences until he reached the sandy shore. "I like this very much," Br'er Rabbit said. "The lapping of the waves on the beach is so restful." But his long ears twitched when he heard another noise. "It sounds like voices," the bunny muttered to himself. "How strange." Now, Br'er Rabbit was a very curious creature, so he ran lippity-lippity-lippity across the sand to see who was talking. When he peeked out from behind a bush, he saw Br'er Elephant and Br'er Whale. They were speaking to each other in their deep voices. "You are the biggest animal in the ocean, and I am the biggest on the land," Br'er Elephant trumpeted proudly. "We should divide up the world between us. You take the seas, and I shall have the land." "It's a deal," boomed Br'er Whale. With that, the whale paddled out to sea, and the elephant stomped back inland. Br'er Rabbit chuckled to himself. "They won't rule me," he thought. "I'll play a trick on them to show everyone how foolish they are." He went to the barn and came out with a thick rope and a heavy metal drum. The little rabbit hid the drum in the bushes and took one end of the rope to the field where Br'er Elephant was plucking leaves from a tree and eating them.
"What do you want?" asked the elephant, who had his mouth full.
"Oh, Br'er Elephant, I have a problem. And only a mighty and magnificent creature like you can help." Br'er Elephant's big ears twitched. He liked compliments.
"Well, I suppose I can help. What's the problem?"
"My cow is stuck in the mud," said Br'er Rabbit. "Do you think you can pull her out?"
"I could pull out a dozen cows," boasted Br'er Elephant, "so one won't be a problem."
Br'er Rabbit thanked the elephant. "I tied this rope to my cow's collar," he said quickly. "You should start pulling when I bang on my drum." The elephant agreed. Then little Br'er Rabbit ran lippity-lippity-lippity to the beach with the other end of the rope.
"Woe is me," he wailed. "I'm far too weak to get my cow out of the mud."
Br'er Whale heard his cry and heaved himself onto the beach with his fins.
"Maybe I can be of assistance," he boomed. "I'm the mightiest creature in the ocean, you know."
"Indeed you are," Br'er Rabbit agreed in a wheedling voice. "Or perhaps in the whole world." This made the whale feel very full of himself. He puffed a great cloud of steam through his blowhole. "Probably," he laughed. "What can I do to help you, little rabbit?"
"I've tied a rope to my stuck cow," lied the bunny.
"Can you pull on this rope when I bang my drum?"
"Of course," huffed Br'er Whale. "I'll have her free in a jiffy."
Br'er Rabbit couldn't help giggling as he ran lippity-lippity-lippity back to the bush. When he banged on his drum, Br'er Whale and Br'er Elephant began heaving on the rope as hard as they could.
"It must be a very big cow or a very deep mud hole," puffed the elephant.
He twisted the rope around his trunk and dug his feet into the dirt, but nothing happened.
"That cow isn't budging," squealed the whale as he paddled with his great flukes.
The rope went taut and twanged as Br'er Elephant and Br'er Whale pulled harder and harder. All the animals came to see what was going on, and they were most amused to find the world's greatest land animal and greatest sea creature making fools of themselves in a tug of war. The two yanked and pulled with all their might. The elephant felt himself sliding bit by bit,
towards the seashore, while the whale was slowly tugged onto the beach. When they saw each other, they gasped in surprise. "You are not a cow," bellowed Br'er Elephant angrily. "Neither are you," squealed Br'er Whale. The other animals laughed as the two huge beasts realized that they had been tricked by Br'er Rabbit. After seeing them make fools of themselves, no creature would agree to being ruled over by the elephant or the whale. "That was great fun," giggled Br'er Rabbit, as he ran lippity-lippity-lippity back to his burrow for a nap. Br'er Rabbit appears in many folktales that have been passed down from generation to generation by African Americans and African descendants in the Caribbean. Br'er Rabbit uses his cleverness to overcome challenges or trick his opponents. Many of his adventures are collected in the book Uncle Remus, compiled by Joel Chandler Harris. Our next story is under the category of Worlds of Wonder. It's called Nala and the Nanny Goat. Nala loved spending her school holidays on Granny's little farm. The only problem was her grandma caught a tummy bug. She was so sick she couldn't get out of bed. "Don't worry," Nala told her. "I'll look after everything." She knew how to feed the animals. It was easy. The chickens and ducks had pellets. The horse had oats. There was plenty of grass for the four sheep and the goat. The girl topped up the water troughs, watered the vegetable garden, and collected eggs from the chicken coop. "What great help you are," Grandma said when Nala brought her a bowl of soup for lunch. "It's no trouble," Nala smiled. "I'll have to get up soon," Grandma sighed. "Nanny will need milking." But Nala thought that her granny still looked pale and shaky. Nanny the goat had to be milked every day. In fact, she would come outside and bleat when it was time. "I can do it," Nala said confidently. She hadn't tried milking yet, but she had watched Grandma closely. When Nanny bleated to be milked, Nala went out to see her. She expected the goat to follow her to the milking shed like she did with Grandma, but the animal just stood there. "Come on, Nanny," she said. "I'm milking you today. Grandma's sick, so we have to work together." Nanny pointed her nose at the house and bleated impatiently. Her udder was full and she moved her hooves uncomfortably. "Maybe I need to speak more firmly," Nala thought. "Now listen here, Nanny. I want you to follow me to the milking shed right now." Nanny trotted away across the yard. "Hey, come back here," Nala called. Nanny stopped and turned around. She didn't like this little stranger. Grandma never yelled at her. Nala had a think. Maybe she could entice Nanny to the shed with food. She pulled up a bunch of clover and walked towards Nanny with her hand outstretched. Nala didn't like the way Nanny stared at her with her funny horizontal irises. Would she butt her with her horns? The girl moved forward, ready to bolt if Nanny charged. Nanny curled her top lip, stuck her long tongue out over her bottom teeth, and moved her jaw sideways. The noise she made sounded like a rude snort. When Nala was two steps away, the goat skipped out of reach. Nala moved towards her again. She was a step away when Nanny trotted to the side. Nala threw the clover down and stomped over to Grandma's tool shed at the back of the house. "Aha," she said when she spied what she needed. While she was gone, Nanny had found the clover. She was chewing a mouthful when Nala came towards her with a rope. One end was tied in a loop. When Nala flung the lasso, Nanny dodged it easily. After a dozen more tries, the girl finally dropped the loop around the goat's neck. "Yes," Nala squealed. Nanny was even more annoyed now. Where was her owner? She looked toward the milking shed. That was where her owner milked her. If she waited there, Grandma might come. Nanny trotted past Nala, pulling the rope through her hand so fast she nearly got rope burn. When they arrived at the shed, Nanny stood beside the milking stool. I'm glad you've finally realized who's in charge, Nala said as she reached for the metal bucket. To Nanny's dismay, Nala sat on the stool her owner was meant to occupy. To show her disapproval, she kicked the bucket. It clattered across the yard as the goat trotted away again. The sun was going down, and Nala was getting upset. Her cheeks were red, and her ears felt as if they were burning when she retrieved the bucket. The girl glared at Nanny. She didn't even like goat's milk, but Grandma did, and there wasn't enough for her porridge tomorrow morning. Nala didn't want to tell Grandma that a goat had gotten the better of her. Then she had an idea. Grandma was sick, so she hadn't changed into one of the floral dresses she usually wore. Her apron was hanging over the back of a chair in the kitchen. Her wide-brimmed straw hat hung on a hook near the front door, and her wellies were on the porch. Grandma was napping in her bed when Nala sneaked into the house and gathered her things. Then she got changed. Nanny was in mid-bleat when she saw a figure leave the house and walk towards the milking shed in the dress, apron, straw hat, and wellies that Grandma always wore. Her ears flicked and she gave a little bleat. That must be Grandma, ready to do the milking. Nala glanced over her shoulder to see Nanny trotting after her. This time, Nanny didn't object when she sat on the milking stool. Nala quickly mastered the art of milking Nanny. She pulled on the goat's teats and creamy milk went into the bucket. The girl grinned. Nanny had nearly made a goat of her, but Nala had tricked her by putting on Grandma's dress, hat, and apron. So now Nanny was the silly billy. Dress up. Swapping a couple of items of clothing with a friend and doing impressions of each other can be great fun. You can also play famous characters from stories. Who will you be? Our next story is from Myths and Legends. It's called The Eye of Odin. Many hundreds of years ago, the Norse peoples worshipped a family of gods that lived in a great golden hall called Valhalla. It was in the branches of a tree so huge that it stretched across the universe. It was known as the World Tree. The leader of the Norse gods was Odin, who was also named the All-Father. He was very wise and could do magic using powerful symbols called runes. Odin's servants were two clever ravens whose names were Huginn and Muninn. Each day, he would send them out across the world, and every evening they would fly back to him and tell him what they had seen. "What news do you bring?" he asked them one night as the moon soared through the heavens. "The giants are making weapons in their forges," croaked Huginn. "They are preparing for a war against the gods." "The huge serpent whose body encircles the world is tossing and turning in his sleep," cawed Muninn. "He is making the world tree itself shake. The end of the world is coming." "These are troubling signs indeed," Odin said gravely as he stroked his gray beard. "I know much, but I need more wisdom. Only a truly wise leader can bring peace in such times." He had heard stories of a mysterious well that could be found among the roots of the world tree. Anyone who drank from it would gain a deeper understanding of the universe, but it was guarded by the giant Mimir. He refused to let anyone approach the well. "I must go and bargain with this giant," Odin decided. "I will drink from his well and gain its wisdom, no matter what the cost." Odin put on a traveler's cloak and a broad-brimmed hat. taking up a gnarled staff, he set off on a great journey down to the roots of the world tree. Comets flew by him as he clambered down the trunk. Fierce winds nearly blew him from its branches, and his fingers froze from the cold. But Odin gritted his teeth and kept climbing down until, at long last, he reached the bottom of the massive tree. As he caught his breath, he noticed that someone was watching him. It was a giant who was mounted on the back of an enormous moose. "So, little Odin has come down from his golden hall," the giant said mockingly. "What brings you to this place?" Odin did not like the giant's tone of voice, but he answered calmly, "I am seeking the Well of Mimir. Can you tell me where it is?" The giant grinned. "Yes, I certainly can, but only if you will answer 3 questions first." Odin agreed, for he wanted to complete his quest. "What river marks the border of the land of the ice giants?" the huge fellow asked. Odin snorted. "That's easy. It's the river Ifling. "What are the names of the horses that drive the day and the night across the sky?" "Why, Skinfax and Rimfax, of course." "And lastly," said the giant, "where will the last battle between the gods and the giants take place?" Odin knew that answer too. "It will be on the golden field outside Valhalla. Now tell me where I might find Mimir's well." The giant gave him directions and a warning. "You should know that Mimir will charge a heavy price to drink his water," he whispered. Odin picked up his staff and walked away without replying. He scrambled across ice and snow until at last he came to the place where a root of the world tree went into a deep well in the ground. It was guarded by a long-bearded giant whose eyes were as blue and cold as the winter sky. "Welcome, Odin, Lord of the Aesir," Mimir said in a sing-song voice. "You are worried that the end of the world is coming and wish to drink from my well." "How did you know that?" gasped Odin. Mimir smiled. "I drink from this well every day, so I know many things." "Let me drink from it too," Odin cried. "I need great wisdom to lead the gods and protect the world." The giant chuckled. "Wisdom comes at a price, so you must give up something in exchange. Before you taste the waters of my well, you must give me one of your eyes." Odin agreed, so the giant dipped a cup into the water and offered it to him. The god accepted it and gulped down the cool, clear liquid. As he drank, new knowledge flooded through his mind. He suddenly knew about the insects that crawled across the leaves of distant forests, the stars in the heaven, and what the future held for every living thing. Odin smiled as he tied a bandage around his head. With his ravens perched on his shoulders, he began the long journey back to Valhalla. How to say it? In the Norse language, the world tree was named it's Yggdrasil, Yggdrasil. The monstrous snake that encircled the earth was known as Jormungandr, and Odin's family of gods was called the Æsir. I think I said Æsir, so it's pronounced Æsir. Next, we have story magic, which is not a story in itself, but the most brilliant books ever. The first one is I Hear a Buho by Raquel McKay, illustrated by Armando Fonseca.
It's a sing-song bedtime story about the creatures that a mother and child hear in the night. This book teaches you Spanish words as you read, and it is illustrated in an eye-catching, handcrafted style. The next book is called Bright Stars of Black British History by J.T. Williams, illustrated by Angela Vives. It tells the story of 14 exceptional and inspiring individuals that you might not have heard of. This gorgeously illustrated and extensively researched book gives amazing insights into the Black experience in Britain and its empire from Tudor times to the 20th century. And the last book is The Hoys by Kes Gray, illustrated by Mark Chambers. This book answers a question that has plagued pirate fans for many years. We know that pirates say ahoy a lot, but what actually is ahoy? Pirate Jake goes on a fun adventure to find out and makes a surprising discovery. The bright and lively illustrations add to the humor of this charming tale. Okay, we have time for one last story. It's a famous fable, The Porcupine and the Snake. When winter arrived, the porcupine looked for somewhere nice and warm to live. "The wind has become so chilly," he said. "I'm shivering so much, it's making my quills rattle." He trotted into the woods, sniffing around for a place to shelter. First, he came to a fallen tree trunk. "This looks like a promising place," he said, spying a hole in its side. But when he poked his head in, he heard a chorus of high-pitched voices. "What do you think you're doing?" said hundreds of tiny termites. "You can't stay in this log. It's our home and breakfast, lunch, and dinner." The porcupine apologized and backed away. "Now where can I go?" he wondered. It might have been his imagination, but it seemed to be getting colder by the minute. There was a space under a thick thorn bush that seemed to be protected from the wind, so he tried crawling in there. "Hey," hissed the lynx, spitting and showing her sharp claws. "This is my lair, and don't you forget it." The porcupine scrambled away in a hurry. He didn't want any trouble. The poor creature was really getting worried. "I might freeze if I don't find somewhere to stay soon," he said, his teeth chattering. A snake overheard the porcupine and felt sorry for him. "Though snakes have cold blood, many of them are very kind-hearted when you get to know them." She poked her head out of her hole and said, "Would you like to stay in here with me? My burrow is quite small, but I'm sure we can both fit." The porcupine was ever so grateful. He wriggled and squeezed his way into the snake's narrow home. "This is so nice," he said. "How kind of you to let me in." However, when the snake tried to get to sleep, she found it impossible to get into a comfy position. Twist and turn as she might, she was always getting poked by the porcupine's spines. "Can you move over a bit?" she asked. The porcupine tried, but it didn't help. They both spent an awkward night in the little burrow and hardly slept at all. "I really wanted to help the poor porcupine," the snake thought, "but I wish I'd never invited him in." She did not know it, but the porcupine was feeling just as upset. When morning came, he cleared his throat and said, "I'm sorry that things are so uncomfortable, especially as you have been so kind. I think I have a solution if you agree." The snake was still sore and tired from her sleepless night, so she just nodded. What did her new friend have in mind? With his claws, the porcupine began scratching and scraping at the hole's walls. As the snake watched in wonder, the mammal dug out an extra chamber that was just the right size for him. "There you are," he said in a satisfied voice. "Now there is plenty of room for both of us." The snake and the porcupine shared that burrow all winter. It was warmer with the two of them in it, and there was enough space for both animals to sleep comfortably.
The snake enjoyed the stories the porcupine told, and the spiky fellow was impressed by the snake's skills at finding food. Their unlikely friendship made winter less lonely for both of them. "I'm glad I let you in," the snake hissed. "It really is nice to share my home." And that's all the time we have for today. This has been Storytime Magazine, this April edition. Thank you for joining me, and have a great day.